Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Freedom Report Podcast. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. If you enjoyed today's show, don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also find us on the Android app Stitcher if you don't have an Apple device. Leave us a five-star review, and we really appreciate that. Welcoming back one of my favorite guests. I think you're the number one guest. You're the guest who's been on the most times, maybe. I've got another guy, a spy, who's one of my favorite military defense analysts who's been on maybe more. But you, science babe, you defender of liberty and chemistry. And vaccinations, oh my god, vaccines. You, the fighter, the defender of Monsanto, the shill babe, and shill dog, but you can't see, unfortunately. We don't have video today. Aww. We're just doing audio, unfortunately, but welcome back, Yvette.
Aw, thank you for having me, Austin.
Why you believe in global warming? You want to control the economy. We want to, you're like Al Gore.
I don't believe in these things. I have evidence for them. There's a big difference.
Ted Cruz says that there has been no zero global warming in 17 years. What do you think?
I think Ted Cruz has been reading different literature than I have. Mm-hmm. So Ted Cruz is also a man who didn't think to buy TedCruz.com before launching a campaign of Ted Cruz for president. So I don't know if I can trust him on things like global warming.
I'm looking at the Washington Post, and they've offered some really interesting charts, and they're throwing three Pinocchios at Senator Ted Cruz's claim here that there's been no warming in the last 17 years. Now, you think that anthropogenic climate change, you think it's just a real phenomenon, but here's what I want to know. Is it going to kill us all? Are we all going to die, Yvette?
Yeah, kill us all is quite the claim. Now, I think that what we have to look at is what are going to be the long-term effects of climate change. Now, yes, the term isn't global warming. The term that we've come to use in the scientific community is climate change, not global warming. Exactly. Because, you know, whenever somebody says global warming, somebody shows up on the Senate floor with a snowball and says, now it's snowing. It's obviously not getting warmer. Oh, shut the fuck up. I said fuck. It's horrible. But yeah, it's, you know, what's going to happen is, of course, we're going to see more melting of the polar ice caps, and eventually ocean levels are going to rise. And whenever somebody says this, it's always 5 to 10 years away. Now, yes, ocean levels are rising slowly, very slowly. Now, I mean, this is going to happen over a long period of time. But when this happens, we need planning. And I mean, whenever someone, of course, says, you know, we need planning, that brings in the government. And of course, that makes us as libertarians a little bit fidgety. And, you know, what are the best solutions for this? You know, some people will bring up something like, you know, taxing carbon. And the problem with something like that. Exactly. And that makes that, you know, that makes me very suspicious, because people like Al Gore, they're just going to pay the carbon tax, because it came out after he went on his tour of inconvenience. It came out that his house put out three times, I think it was something like three times more pollution than the average house did, you know, because it was just, you know, such a big freaking house, because he made a lot of money off that little movie of his. And, you know, there was factual basis for the amount of pollution that he said was, the amount of carbon that he said was being, or carbon dioxide that was being put into the atmosphere, and the amount of anthropogenic climate change that was happening. But taxation is probably not the solution to it, because even with paying carbon taxes or doing carbon credits, he's still polluting.
Damn it, science babe, I don't want to agree with you on everything. Why must you make so much bullshit sense? Yes, everything you say makes such good sense. I just get so sick of it.
Yes. Well, I do what I can now. I mean, someone like him who has the money just going to pay it. Really poor people who don't have the money, it's going to really hurt them economically. So here's the thing. All the things that we want to do to stop long-term damage from climate change, we're doing anyway. We're making Teslas. We're producing solar panels. So if we make it economically viable,
you're making perfect sense here, yeah. Yvette. Where does the government get involved? The problem is that none of what you're saying involves the government, and I don't understand. I don't see a future without government. Who would build the Teslas?
Here's the thing. Whenever we do, we have a government that sets up what we call a free market? Because, I mean, a free market has, you know, a government behind it, yes?
Yeah, well, don't get me started.
Like, I'm not an economist. I'm not a politician. I am a scientist who says, you know, whenever we add a new law, there's always going to be unforeseen circumstances. So I'm curious what, how we can make a more economically viable, a solution that's going to make, I want to know how we can make it more economically viable for people that are already in the energy business to make solar panels and renewable sources.
Everything you're saying is fantastic, and I totally agree, and that is, you need to be at the forefront of scientific innovation, and you need to be of the voice of reason on this, because there is so much hysterical, just sort of, and it's almost, it really is bullying, you know what I mean? Like, here's the thing. I look at the instance of, like, vaccines, okay? Accepted science. Fine.
Yes.
Okay, I understand that. But when it comes to global warming, it's not that there isn't, like, consensus of scientists saying that, like, you know, that that we have the problem. The problem is identified, correct? Well...
Absolutely.
The solutions are the issue. With a vaccine, the difference is that we know what the solution is. Take a vaccine.
Vaccinate. Exactly.
But the problem is that when it comes to solutions that the global warming freaks want to push on the rest of us, they're all so coercive, and they're whether or not they actually will accomplish their goals is dubious at best.
Well, I mean, I know other countries have adopted cars that are more gas efficient. And here's the thing: when gas prices went up, people stopped buying bigger cars. People went for more gas efficient cars. And I think, like, it's strange to me that, like, because I lived in England for a year. I lived in, you know, the socialist nightmare of England. I kid. But there was it was funny to me how much smaller the cars are over there and how much more gas efficient the cars were. Like, in other countries, they have just these much more gas efficient cars available. So it's funny to me when I hear that the car manufacturers are working on making more gas efficient cars in the U.S. These cars already exist, just they're not on the U.S. market. I'm curious why, like, the U.S. consumer hasn't pushed for these cars to be available here.
Well, is this because of gas prices? I mean, like,
Well, I mean, I know that they're going to be, they've said that, as I know California is always kind of leading the curve on wanting emissions to be lower, because we have a little bit of a pollution problem in L.A. The smog is real. But, you know, we're always saying, you know, by 2017 or by 2022, we're going to have the fuel efficiency up to a certain point. It's already up to that point in other countries. They have these cars available. I'm curious why they're not available in the U.S., and it's because the consumer hasn't demanded it, and it's because it hasn't been made available yet. I'm curious why that hasn't happened. I think, you know, the demand is going to meet, or sorry, the supply is going to meet the demand by the consumer. So that's, I mean, we're seeing, the Tesla is coming out, and completely electric cars are coming out, and it's a wonderful thing. But I mean, at the same time, even with the electric cars coming out, we have to make the fuel for the cars to be, you know, like when you plug it into the wall to power up your electric car, the fuel comes from somewhere. We still need to get that electricity from somewhere, and that can come from solar, that can come from a better energy source. But I think demonizing the companies that are making electricity from gas is not the correct option. It's not the correct thing to do in the meantime.
But those oil and gas companies fund Republicans, and they're owned by the Koch brothers, and the Koch brothers are trying to take over the government, and they want to stop it with their anti-science agenda, the Koch brothers. Don't you know that these people are trying to take over the government and be like fascist libertarians and stuff?
It's, you know, I find
they're
it
in their corporation buildings, and they're being all corporation-y, and they make money.
Here's the thing. Whenever I hear someone yelling about a corporation, all I hear is the Charlie Brown teacher voice. I hear wah 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 wah, wah. And I hear that, and it's just my ears tune out, because I was at a convention in Boston a few weeks ago, and that's when I realized, like, I'm a little bit left leaning. I'm
very
social
liberal.
Exactly.
That's
no, it's like
me
I'm
too, baby. Me too.
I'm far left socially. I'm give or take a centrist fiscally,
what?
But you know, it's give or take. But you know, I always say, how can we handle this with the free market first before ever touching something with the government? But when I went to Boston, that was when I realized how much of a libertarian I was, because I was on a panel with a bunch of other scientists.
Real left-leaners.
Exactly. I was on a panel with a bunch of other scientists from Boston, and here's what they said. They started saying that capitalism was bad. Oh, they said capitalism was bad. And then these same scientists who were saying that capitalism is bad went downstairs to sell these trinkets and books and things of theirs in the dealer's room. So capitalism was bad, except for when it was putting money in their pocket.
Yeah, but we need to scientifically organize society, though. Don't you understand? We must make everyone get along the exact same way. Sieg Heil!
Yeah, it's. I mean, I don't think that they're Nazis. Let's, you know, let's. I think
nine,
we lose.
Nine.
No,
nine.
I think. Hey.
Are they socialists?
I think some of these people do lean socialist, because I mean, a lot of times they'll say that, you know, they're fine with socialism, and I'm like, that's not good. I think that capitalism is what drives people to make profit, and I think that sometimes it does drive people to make bad decisions.
The funny thing is, ask these people if do they love America, and they'll tell you they love America with all of their heart. But they're socialists, and then I made the joke. There's this big radio host, this butthead guy, his name's a social democrat by the name of Tom Hartman. I said, so you're a hardcore nationalist, you're also a hardcore socialist. What do they call a national socialist in German?
Austin.
Oh,
but I mean, let's not do that to people.
It's my probably, but we're libertarians and I want to get down to the grass tacks. You're a scientist. Well, then let's talk about real shit. Let's get down to the nitty gritty here. What do these people believe? They believe in they believe in an organization of society according to scientific principles. And listen, fine. I love science and I'm pro-science. But the problem with these people is that they want their experimentation process made legal upon people a lot of times. So, for example, you are a supporter of mandatory vaccines. Now, here's where we disagree. You are a supporter of a mandatory vaccination program, because otherwise, what I say is that they should be quarantined if they choose not to or not go to public school. Otherwise, you're willing to jam a needle in someone's arm and violate the sovereignty of their body, Yvette. And people like you, you're the mild ones, but it's people like you that it's like, you know, run, get your kid and run. It makes people want to go off and be an Amish on the farm.
I think that's a little bit of an unfair characterization.
I just boxed you in a corner, baby. Bring it.
It's what I mean. Let's tone down the rhetoric, baby. we're amongst friends here. Let's think back about what a vaccine is, and think back about what a vaccine prevents. Vaccines are proven time and again to be safe, and to be much safer than the alternative, which is disease and death. Now, we've seen over and over again what happened before we had vaccinations. We had smallpox. We had people who were maimed horribly by polio, and polio has been gone from this country for decades. Polio is still happening.
Wave your credentials in front of me, science. Perhaps it's time you had them renewed.
Right? But no, it's like, I mean, we've seen over and over again, vaccines are safe, vaccines are fine. The only reason why vaccines are being touted as something that the only reason we're having this debate is because one paper was published in error, that somebody said there might be a correlation between this one shot and autism. He did a study of, I think, 6 children, which is not large enough to base an entire study on. They never replicated the results ever. We've studied about 25 million children now and seen no higher incidence of autism in vaccinated kids versus unvaccinated kids.
Got it. Now, I don't think that any of my listeners here are worried about autisms coming from the vaccines and, you know, from the chemtrail juice.
No, I mean, what they are worried about,
Yvette, is the sovereign, the right to own their bodies and to do with as they please, and that their kids, provided they harm no one else, of course. But that they should not be required to have a vaccination by force of law. I mean, how invasive is the government that we want it that involved to demand that someone vaccinate their child? I understand the whole provisions about not going to school. That's fine. You know, you're not going to go into public areas, stuff like that. That's fine. But I mean, look at the Amish. You know what I mean? Like, don't people have a right if they wish to?
No, I understand what you're saying. If somebody wishes to check out from society entirely, mm-hmm. go ahead.
Right.
But I think that's the price for not vaccinating, because there are people who have compromised immune systems who did not choose to have that compromised immune system, who, if you come in contact with them, if you haven't been vaccinated, you're sentencing them to death.
Okay, so it's fine. The problem that we run into when we talk about issues like this about matters of policy, you know, is that, you know, it's how much coercion are we willing to enact? Now, when it comes to vaccines, I would tie it back to global warming. You know, like the question is how much do we need to coerce our fellow man to find a solution to common problems?
Here's my question. It's like, I wouldn't like, and I mean, I'm with you on this, that the government uses force, and that's the difference between government and private industry on anything. And I wouldn't use force to get people to vaccinate. It's just, if you don't vaccinate, there are things that you cannot participate in, public school, that type of thing. However, what is the penalty if somebody doesn't vaccinate and they're not, and by not vaccinating, they're either them or their child causes egregious injury to somebody who is unable to vaccinate?
Right. Well, and the weirdo anti-vaxxers who don't believe the vaccines work are going to say, but if my child is not vaccinated and yours is, your child should be fine. But they don't get that it like grows.
There are people,
right? Yep, and debate is one thing, but I want to get back to global
warming. It's more the bodily autonomy thing.
It is. Well, that's the principle of the matter, but we're not going to solve the problems of the world. We're not going to solve the problems of the world right now when it comes to that issue, but when it comes to global warming, you know, we talk about carbon taxes, we're talking about, certain regulations on demands on cars and vehicles, which some of that stuff makes sense, you know, so I can understand.
You and I talked earlier about a sugar tax.
Yes. Okay, so we're talking about taxation as coercion. Why don't you tell us about the sugar tax out there, Bud?
Now, somebody, there's a chef called Jamie Oliver over in England, and he suddenly went from chef to public taxation and health expert because he decided sugar was making everyone fat. So he decided the way to make people not fat was to tax it. He's become a very big advocate of taxing sugar. Now, this is number one. He's not in America, so he has no say over this, thank God. But this is a big, this would be a disaster if that would happen. Because number one, how do you legislate for taxing one of three macronutrients? Because there are only three forms of calories you get: protein, fat, and carbohydrate. Sugar is a short chain carbohydrate. So how do you legislate for taxing sugar? Is it only added sugar? Does honey count? Does maple syrup count? Does fruit count? Yes. Because all the calories in fruit comes from carbohydrate or sugar.
There's a famous quote I'll just inject right now from Charles de Gaulle I think it was right after World War II. He goes, how can you govern a country that has 246 different kinds of cheese? He's talking about the regulation, because they would have regulations on the types of cheese and what makes what kind of cheese, and so the whole part, the whole thing is like, you know, you're talking about types of sugar here, but I mean, like, you know, how are you going to regulate types of sugar?
Yes, and I mean, it's, I understand wanting to get people healthier. Now, I know it, some people will look at me and go, I prefer the food babe. Her whole thing is promoting people to be healthier. She promotes misinformation, and I feel like saying we should tax sugar, it will make people healthier, is misinforming people, because sometimes your body body needs sugar. Now, I'm not saying plain white sugar is healthy. I'm saying you like glucose. When your body breaks down, you know, that apple into pure glucose, that's what fuels your brain. If you're a marathoner, you're going to be sucking down packets of goo every 4 miles. I know this. I've run 2 marathons. You need some amount of carbohydrate, of glucose in your diet. Most people do. So this is saying tax sugar. I mean, number one, it's getting into people's kitchens and their lives. And number two, it's just bad policy. So, I mean, I this goes back to my why I'm a libertarian, even if I'm not the most strict one. I think that, you know, conservatives sometimes want to get into your bedroom. This is liberals wanting to get into your kitchen. Just get the fuck out of my house.
I know, but that's the problem is that everybody wants to run my shit. It's the bedroom and the boardroom, you know what I mean? Like, everybody's like, ew, terrible. Like, you know, the Republicans want to tell you what to do with your uterus, ew. And then it's like, oh, okay, well, you want to have bodily autonomy, but I can't choose what sugar I can eat, you know what I mean? Like, it's just stupid. It's just retarded.
Exactly. And I mean, let's not tell people how they eat instead. And I mean, I always think, you know, we do have, you know, a bit of a problem with people. You know, we're not the healthiest in this country in terms of our weight, in terms of how we take care of ourselves. But you know what? I think the way to that is not taxing sugar, is not putting a punitive tax on how people choose to eat themselves and eat themselves in terms of how they choose to feed themselves. It's I think the way to handle that is education, is telling people, like, we have health classes in high school, and I don't think they're run very well, because I remember my high school health class. It was not a nutrition class. Instead of what we have now, we should be telling educating people on, you know, proper nutrition. It's a much better solution than punitive taxes on the choices people make. Because I mean, if we start taxing this, we're going to put, you know, like, who wants to put the new cupcake shop out of business because somebody decided sugar was
a bad solution? Liberals, Democrats, because of evil corporations making cupcakes, making us fat. It's like Parks and Rec, you know what I mean? Where it was like Sweetums, you know, the sugary Coke and stuff like that. They're always trying to make us look like evil capitalists, just trying to make people fat. Or, you know, people just they want what they want, and they need what they need, and it's none of your damn business what they eat.
Yeah, it's like, if you want to
tax, you know, screw you guys.
Yeah, it's like if you want to have a cupcake, have a cupcake, but, you know, have a salad too. Like, there's nothing wrong with sugar, you know, in moderation. But, you know, moderation is key in this. But I mean, like I said, legislating this would be just a horrible idea. Like, somebody on my site, when I brought up the Jamie Oliver thing, said, yeah, tax it at $1 per gram. I'm like, are you kidding me? Sure. Do you have any idea how small a gram of sugar is? Like, this is, and I understand this person probably just threw it out as a suggestion, but the funny thing is with Jamie Oliver, the chef who's saying tax sugar, he puts olive oil all over everything. Oil can make you fat too.
No, only what I think is that should be what is banned and legislated. No, my special pet interest, a thing that I don't like. Or a lot of times, you know, these corporations, you know, they don't like competition, you know, so they'll be like, hey, let's regulate the sugar industry. And meanwhile, all the honey producers are like, mwah.
It's just silly, and it would be horrible policy.
I get so tired of agreeing with everything on that you have to say, which must be the impetus behind your success. I mean, you are just blowing up. You're going to be writing a book. I mean, I know many people that want to work with Science Babe. Yvette, would you say that, like, I was a single catalyzing event?
It was helpful.
On the Freedom Report podcast.
It was helpful. You've given me a huge boost in it. I think I've gotten at least, I want to say about 4,000 of my followers have come directly from your site.
Awesome.
It's been great. And I know you putting me on that nice little, I don't know if it was you or one of your writers, but getting on that nice little list of yours, calling me the one of the 20 hottest libertarians.
What?
It made me decide to hit the gym more. I'm not going to lie.
I laugh so hard because all the people who hate me are the people who weren't on the list, and everybody who's on the list is happy. Yeah, is my friend and likes me.
And I saw that list come out. I clicked it out. I'm like, did Austin put me on this? So it's thank you. And I was a little embarrassed, but I was like, oh, it's going to be good for business.
Yeah, of course. It's great for business.
I was just on another podcast. It was Lions of Liberty with Mark Clare, and he was wonderful. So that shot a lot of really nice people over to my page, and it was really great of you. So I appreciated it.
You are the science babe. You are the science babe, and science must be defended.
Yes, it absolutely must. And I am not the only one who's out there defending science, and it needs it.
Good. Well, I'm behind you all the way. Yvette, where can people learn more about what you're doing and follow the Science Babe fan feed?
Over at facebook.com/sciencebabe. My own personal blog is scibabe.com. And of course, you can find me at Twitter @sciencebabe.
Yeah, science, bitch.
Thank you, Austin.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to the Freedom Report podcast. If you enjoy our show today, subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also find us on the Android application Stitcher. Stitcher.com is where you can go and get us if you don't have one of those tricky little Apple devices. But if you do, and even if you don't have an Apple device, but you want to be like, hey, Leif Beaverson is the shit, I want to help this guy out, do me a favor, 5 stars on iTunes. Just go over there. I know you've got an account. Come on. Give me 5 stars, and then I can spread the liberties, right? Leif Beaverson coming at you every single day. Your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at thelibertarianrepublic.com.